Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 269. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Again, it's twangy.
It is twangy. Phil Wilson.
Me likey. I like that a lot. Good morning.
And our buddy Graham Thickens is off twanging somewhere. Twanging his swanger. I don't know where he is.
Oh.
So, he's up at his lake, I think.
He's up north, where they have problems with internet access.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's what Julio was talking about in his story. Wow, how's that for a segue?
That is a great segue.
Nice segue.
Well, of course, Graham's place is in Wisconsin, not Minnesota.
Well, I'm sure that in rural Wisconsin, they have the same problems with broadband that we have.
They do. Yeah, they absolutely do. And so Julio's article, was really the crux of it was what?
We're not going to get the broadband we want by the time we want it.
Yeah, based on the rollouts. But you know what, though?
Okay, that's it for the show then. Thanks.
But in his article, which of course will be in the show notes, in his article, he talked about AT&T and Verizon's LTE. So really, his discussion was wireless based.
Yeah, and I think that's the way that they're going to get to most of the rural areas is through wireless. Yeah. Yeah, it'll probably be something like what Chaska has done, where they've put their own private fiber network, and then they're using Wi-Fi to fill in the middle.
Okay,
something like that I think would make a lot of sense in a rural area where you don't have to wire every house. Buildings in city buildings, maybe in strategic parts of the city, and then put in Wi-Fi antennas all over the place and blanket the place.
Well, and he mentioned Spring Grove Communications in here, who has 1,300 customers for their fiber running to their homes. And I remember there's a Lake Communications or Lake Connections or something up in Two Harbors, and they rolled out fiber. And so much of the North Shore is beginning to get fiber. And, so if you're there, that's great. But if you're 10 miles off, good luck. So to your point, they're going to have to do something wireless.
Yeah. So it'll be probably between Wi-Fi and wireless cellular networking. That'll be the way that they'll probably get, get to their goal.
Yeah. I think you're missing the most logical choice.
What?
What is that?
Balloons.
Oh, I thought you meant pigeons.
Oh. Yeah. So the Google balloons, so that would be good.
There you go. See? Balloons over rural Minnesota. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm telling you though, if you've ever had dish television, like we did, we had dish TV. Every time the clouds would roll over, thunderstorms or whatever, that's it. You're done watching TV.
That's when you switch over to your leaf antenna.
Right.
Ooh, there you go.
Yeah, but how great would it be?
Or you go down to your daughter's room where she has that already technology already set up.
That's right. That's right. Well, yeah, you can get the regular channels, but if you want to watch Breaking Bad when it was running, you can't.
Sorry about that. Hey,
I know.
So you can
watch it over the internet.
Over the interwebs?
Yeah. You can watch it on Netflix.
Well, but the point, though, is that, it really is mission critical to have decent broadband, especially if you're, if you're in graphic design or if you're even wanting to use webcam and do screen sharing with clients. I mean, you got to have some decent bandwidth in order to do that. And what do you do if you're in Brainerd or Bemidji? I mean, those areas are good because they're the broadband in some of those major towns is pretty good, Alexandria and so forth. But what do you do? Again, what do you do if you're 5-10 miles out? You move. Yeah.
Move to Fargo.
No, that's all right.
No?
Well, what I thought was interesting is there was a simultaneous article in Twin Cities Business Magazine about high-speed broadband's not a luxury, and really went into some use cases on it. But what I thought was even more interesting was the rumor that CenturyLink is hinting at 1 gigabit per second in Minnesota. And the reason that excited me so much is because I can look out the sliding door in the back of our house, and I can see the box where fiber is dropped on Mitchell Road, and so it's literally 14,000 feet from my house. it, as the road flies, you know, if you went down the road and dropped a fiber in. So I'm hoping that they're going to light up our neighborhood with a gigabit per second. Could you imagine?
It'll probably be pretty expensive, though.
No.
It's all right. Nothing's too expensive for Steve.
That's right.
Well, would you pay $500 a month?
No, but I'm paying $125 now for Comcast Business, which is $75 down and $20 up. And the going rate for gigabit, 1 gigabit per second around the country with Google Fiber and with Community Fiber and all of that is about $80 a month. So it actually would be less. And the throughput apparently is about 800 megabit per second symmetrical up and down. Now, you know, at the end of the day, there's not a server in the world that's going to be able to keep up if you've got lots of people on gigabit per second connections. So it's going to be interesting to see how that whole thing shakes out. But still, it would be nice to have the bandwidth, wouldn't it?
You could do a lot with it.
Yeah.
I'm not missing it. Well, but then again, I don't upload a lot of video. So.
Yeah. So what's your speed right now?
You want me to run a speed test right now?
No, but you know.
I have no idea. I have no idea.
What you have Charter over there?
I have Charter. Yeah, I've got.
So you probably got the 30.
Yeah. I think I may have 50.
You got the 60 then. You got the business.
Yeah, the 60. Yeah.
You got the business.
Okay, well, that's pretty good.
Let me just go ahead and run a speed test real quick.
Well, it's not going to work if you're on Skype, but
it'll work.
So if you got 60 down, then what's the up?
Yeah,
7, 10?
Not shit, yeah. It's
probably something like that.
Yeah.
Because I've got 30 and I think it's 5.
Okay.
So it's probably 60 and 10, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you're a big shot business user like Mr. Wilson.
Yeah, exactly. He can afford it anyway. His money.
Right. With his big shot business.
That's right.
Indeed. That's right. I'm still on the lowly residential and it's pretty good.
Business, yeah.
It's, you know, works.
Yeah.
Doesn't go out very often.
Well, so here's what's kind of interesting to me.
I recall paying extra. We got 30 and what is it? 30 and
I get 30 and 5. Yeah, I think it is, but I usually get about 25 and maybe 3. Something like that. If I do a speed test,
yeah. I wonder how I got business. So,
pay more money.
Yeah, I know. I wonder. But I don't know if I've. I don't recall ever paying that. But anyway, go ahead.
Maybe you got one of those bundles. You know what I mean? You into it.
They probably bundled it up on me, but you know I do that. So, but anyway, what were we saying about?
It's a big week. Big week coming up.
About speed test. No, you were saying something about, seriously, Steve, would you need that kind of speed?
Well, no, but I mean, it's always a good thing to have more speed, right? I mean, right now, the reason I bought Comcast Business is because I wanted to be able to have the 4.5 hour turnaround if I've got problems, mm-hmm. because on the consumer side, it can be up to 2 days and I can't be out for 2 days. So,
and you didn't want to get cut off because you're streaming so much.
Well, that's the frosting on the cake.
No data cap.
Right, yeah. No data cap. But at any rate, because, you know, we're only doing now about 450 gigs a month. So speed, all the speed's better. But here's the kicker. This I find really interesting. So, you know, the whole Netflix paying Comcast for peering so they can have more speed. And so now Netflix has been performing admirably. I mean, it just works great. But the kicker is HBO Go... and even the PBS app are not performing well at peak times. A lot of buffering and so on. It's because at the server level, they're not able to deliver enough simultaneous streams. So they have to stop yours and then send you whatever data they can, and then it'll start up again. And that's what I find interesting is all these services are trying to deliver, and they're not able to keep up.
It's just a matter of investing in the right amount of routers to do it. Right. And that's HBO just doesn't do that.
Right. Exactly.
My son has HBO Go and he complains about it.
Yeah.
You know, when there's like a big premiere of something and you can't see it.
Yep. Exactly.
So.
Yeah. And it's only going to get worse. I mean, mm-hmm. especially more people have fiber, you know,
they just need to put more servers in.
Right.
That's all. are more switches and, you know, more infrastructure in for to support more users.
Yeah. That magic stuff that just makes it work.
That's right. That costs money.
Magic.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, yeah, it should be interesting. So there wasn't much going on in Minnesota. I mean, this is the typical summer doldrums where, you know, people are starting to vacation and getting ready to go on vacation and going out and enjoying the weather.
The user groups aren't as full.
Yeah. And so, yeah. But what's coming up this way? Google I.O. starts what
Google
day?
Google I.O.
Yeah. What day does it start?
Does it start Monday? Or is it Tuesday? It's Monday or Tuesday?
I believe it starts on the 24th at 2.
That's Tuesday. Okay.
Okay. Okay. And then just runs through the end of the week, right?
It's just 2 days.
Here, let me go to the link.
It's 2 days.
Oh, it's just 2 days?
Yep.
Okay.
But they usually get really good swag.
Well, and they have a session here. I'm looking at jank-free performance audits.
Damn, well, there you go.
I wish I could go to that.
There you go.
Oh, man.
Well, yeah, but you know, it should be an exciting Google I/O. First, everybody will get some really cool stuff. I don't know if they'll get a Google Watch like a Moto 360, but that's, you know, they'll be talking about Google Wear.
What are the big predictions that
Lollipop?
Oh yeah, Lollipop.
Lollipop's the next Android iteration.
Yeah, yep. And they're saying it's Lollipop. It's going to be Android 5, not 4.5. So.
Ooh. So big
Android
doings on
5,
that.
big doings.
Huh.
So most people will see that sometime next year.
Yeah.
Well, do you really think so?
Yep.
Are you able? So let me ask you guys.
It always takes forever for this stuff to roll out. So
you guys know this stuff well, but can't you go somewhere and force your device, test it to see if it's compatible and then force your device? Well, what if you root the device?
If you root it, you can, sure.
You could root it, but if you have a Nexus device like I do, they do release the software updates, you know, freely, and I can download them and I can do a force update.
Yep.
I usually wait for the over the air because it's much more convenient and it doesn't wipe your data when you do the upgrade.
Okay.
It's kind of a pain to like sign in everything and get all your apps, you know, signed in again.
Right.
Signed in, unsigned in.
Yeah. And so there's really no reason for me to update it. I mean, if I was like Phil here and I had a business that, you know, depended on compatibility with the latest release, I would probably do that. But I would probably have a test phone and do that.
Just to make sure you didn't goof it up.
Well, no, I wouldn't take my phone and blitz it out and restart it because it takes you like 2 or 3 days to get everything set up again.
No.
You know, it's like signing into all the apps, and I do it as I use the app. So it's like, you know, just, I don't know.
Well, I had to do that. So because we're going to be going on this big trip this summer to Rome.
Did you want to give out dates of when you're going to be gone?
Yeah, exactly. Like
so which blue phone did you end up with?
Well, so I have to tell you what I did.
Oh, no.
So I went in and I was going to buy the blue phone. So I was all set to buy it, and I had picked the one I wanted out, and the one I wanted was $349. And so I started to look at that. And then my daughter says to me, she goes, Dad, are you going to ever sell your iPad? And I've got a third generation with a Verizon connection. And I said, well, yeah, at some point, you know, I'm probably going to upgrade to an Air or something like that. And she said, well, if you want to, I'll buy it from you. And then I'll sell mine and I'll give you the money for that too. And I said, no, wait a minute. What? Well, anyway, so that got the process going. And anyway, the punchline is I went out and bought a new iPad mini. and it's because I have, you know, I've got all the apps and I've got off maps. You know, then I had 3 extra downloads on that. And I've got all this stuff that I've already purchased. And again, you know, it's that whole lock-in thing, right? And so now I've got this little iPad mini. It's a 64 gig with a Verizon. And it's unlocked and I can buy a SIM card when I get over to Rome. And then she's going to take my old one and she's going to buy a SIM card for that. So we'll each have a device, you know, if she and her brother want to take off and go somewhere, they can, and we'll be able to get a hold of each other and so forth. So anyway, so that's what I ended up doing.
So did you get it at Best Buy?
I did.
Cause they had some deals this week. Cause it looks like they're clearing out all the original iPad minis and the Retina ones too. So I guess there's going to be a big upgrade.
Yeah, the upgrade is supposedly going to happen in September, which wouldn't do me any good. And
Well, at least you got your $50 off.
Well, it was a little better than that.
But wasn't it 50? Oh, okay.
Well,
that's good.
Yeah, I can't say, but anyway.
Oh, he got a special low whispering deal.
Yeah, well, it's because of somebody I know that actually works there. But anyway.
Oh, Mr. Best Buy helped him out.
Yeah, so, but the point is that I mean, it's just what a great little form factor and all of that. The funny part is realizing that based on this blue phone, the screen was so large that I thought, you know, I mean, honest to God, it's literally halfway between my iPhone 5S and the mini and could be perfect. And it's going to be really fascinating to watch what happens when the phone sizes are to the point, you know, is it going to cannibalize the tablet, the small tablet sales?
Of course it will.
Because people opt for the phone.
I think five and a half to 6-inch phones will take away the demand for 7-inch tablets.
I think it will too, because basically this tablet's a big phone.
True.
I mean, it really is. So.
Yep. So anyway, if I was on last week, I would say you should get a Moto G, which are $199, totally unlocked. I think it's 4.5-inch, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So super, super, inexpensive.
LTE.
Yeah, it has LTE. It's any GSM network, so it's AT&T or T-Mobile or whoever.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of phone that, you know, I would get that way more than some blue phone, which I really haven't heard anything about.
Well, actually, I've heard some good things, good reviews on Amazon too.
But that's just me.
Yeah. But you know, the other part is you got to look at the frequencies.
Right.
So you got to make sure that the GSM and HSDPA plus frequencies are all covered so that you can go to these other countries. Here's the one thing that I learned is in multiple countries in Europe, you can go and you can buy these SIM cards, but they'll sell you a 3G SIM card for price X, say 20 euros.
Yeah, probably 15. But
well, it's 15 euros plus 5 for the card, and it comes with some voice minutes and so on. And so let's say you're spending 20 euros. Or you can upgrade by spending another 5 or 10 euros to the LTE network and get the SIM card for that. And so it literally, LTE is considered a premium because Italy, for example, just got that rolled out. So it's not simple. You know, everybody thinks, well, you buy an unlocked phone, you just go buy a SIM card. It's like, no, because there's all these different iterations of SIM cards. And there's more and more, by the way, multi-country and European-centric SIM cards you can buy. They're not cheap, but they're a lot cheaper, you know, if you're going from country to country than trying to buy them all in each country and so on.
I have a true SIM. TRU?
Yeah, what's that?
Or True Phone. They're a phone company that has kind of a pan-European, well, really all around the world. So you pay them for use, and they have different rates in different countries, and it just works. So you don't have to. It's a little more expensive than if you just buy the all-you-can-eat SIM wherever, whatever country you're in. But if you're only spending a couple of days someplace, I'll throw 15, 30 bucks on the thing and then have a connection. And it's both data and text and voice.
Boy, I wish our friends, John and Janine, I wish they would have talked to you before they left. They went on this, Delta offered this thing with miles, where you could travel around the world. Mm-hmm. And they had all these different rules, and I forget what it was. It was like 200,000 miles a piece, and you could fly around the world. And they went to, I don't know, 9 different countries. And he was complaining about the fact that, you know, God, what a bitch it is to try to use a mobile phone anywhere and all the stuff you had to do and how much it cost and so on. And again, like to your point, they were only there a day or so.
Yeah. So I just dropped the link in the notes. So if people are interested, they can go there. And again, it's more expensive than if you get the all you can eat sim at the airport in the little kiosk thing or in the vending machine.
Right.
But if you're only going to be someplace for a week or so, because all these cards you buy and it's a month of service. So if you're only there for a week, it can get sort of expensive. And if you only need $5 worth of service when you're there,
right,
you know, this actually gives you that. And you have to, I think the minimum top up is like $15 increments. And, you know, the rates are somewhat competitive with what's out there, but I just use it for convenience.
Well, okay, so that's what's happening at Google I.O. What the hell?
Yeah, how do we get on this?
Oh, my God.
He was talking about... You brought it up, Phil. You brought up the TruePhone thing.
No, I
didn't. That's how we got derailed.
I didn't bring up the TruePhone
thing. Yes, you did. You asked him.
No. When did I ask him?
I mentioned something about the tablet and then said something about Italy, and then you brought up... You asked me a question, Tim, about the phone.
That's when I nodded off.
Oh, okay. Well,
sorry, I was wondering what that.
Well, you know what phone that you don't want to get for this trip?
Google Glass?
No.
No, it's not a phone.
Wait a minute. Amazon Fire Phone.
Wait a minute.
You do not want to get that Amazon Fire Phone because it's only AT&T frequencies.
I'm a little concerned.
In the U.S. here. Only.
Phil wants to keep talking about Google I.O.
You're my Android brother here, and you gloss over I.O. You just gloss right over it.
All right.
You got lollipop in your mouth, and that was it.
All right, so here's a question.
You got Googleware coming out there. You got all sorts of stuff percolating out there. That's going to be a big conference this year.
All right, here's a Google I.O. question that the Tech Radar article had. Will Android 5.0 Lollipop lick iOS? Yeah, wasn't that cute?
Yeah.
So do you think it is based on, have you guys heard much?
I don't know. And to top iOS 8, they're going to have to do some pretty fancy stuff like that. That thing where you're doing an email on your computer and then you leave and it's already on your phone and all that continuation stuff. I don't see how Android can do that. Yeah, maybe they can do that in conjunction with Chrome. Maybe.
But here's the thing.
I think there may be a lot of "Hey, look over there" going on at Google I/O for this. I mean, you look at things like Glass, and you look at things like Google Wear, and you know, I don't know what they'll do with Glass. You know, to revive that sucker, but and to move it past the nerd phase, but. You know, the Google Wear, Google Watch thing, I think that's a big deal. Chromecast continues to grow, you know, and add apps and features. And so, I mean, I just don't know if it's going to be, you know, will our OS be, you know, beat Apple? I think they'll kind of try to play that down for right now.
So what do you think they'll do? You know, there is a big, big deal that they just bought Dropcam. For $555 million. Well, Nest did.
Nest did. Yeah. Google didn't.
Well, but it's part of Google bought Nest.
Right, but they're operating Nest as its own company.
Correct. Yeah. All right. So that's a better technical clarification.
It's not integrated. So I'm sure that the Tony Fadell and company had to go to the guys at Google and say, "Hey, we want to do this," and they said, "Cool," It's not like Larry and Sergey are sitting there, you know, looking over the shoulder, probably.
Yeah.
You know, this sounds like this was planned and they just executed it after the acquisition.
Right.
Well, so probably the Google money didn't hurt either.
Well, so what do you think Google is going to do, though, at I.O. with respect to home automation? To answer HomeKit, maybe to answer HealthKit in the health space?
There's got to be some. I mean, they already have Android in the home, but they haven't really done much with it. Yeah, so maybe they extend that out some. Who knows? Yeah, maybe that'll be the big story coming out of this, and we'll be talking about it next week.
Well,
but the one thing I want to see is that Aria phone, the Lego phone where you like get the pieces and you snap it together. I mean, to me, that's just a fascinating. I don't know if I'll ever get one, but it's a fascinating idea.
It is an interesting. It's the Lego phone. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's Project Aria, not Aria.
Whatever.
Sorry.
Yeah. But that is kind of a cool concept. I'm like you though, Tim. I don't know if I'd ever buy one. But one of the things that I do really, really miss is the ability, like with my Trio 750, to have to have an extra battery. Just put an extra battery, you know, pop the thing in there and boom, you're good to go. Yeah. You know, no charging and all this whole thing about the battery not being removable. I gotta tell you, just I understand why all the design stuff and the form factor and the fact that you got a case on it and blah blah blah. But
do you have a quick charger that you use?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and in fact, for the trip, I just bought this
fabulous
5-port international ready USB charging device, and you can charge 2 iPads and 2 smartphones, you know, 2 tablets and 2 smartphones, and then 1 additional lower power one simultaneously.
So it's a big battery.
No. It's a charging unit. So at the hotel.
Oh, you have to plug it in. Yeah, okay. I was talking about the.
Yeah, I'd carry a battery with me, but I only carry one that's good enough to charge the phone.
Right, and I've got a 10,000 milliamp battery that will charge my full size iPad 1.5 times, and it'll do the mini twice. So I'll have that in my briefcase.
We'll talk more about Google I/O next week. So how do we always get onto what Steve bought? How does that always happen?
I don't know.
You make me stop sending me text messages during the show.
Should be a new segment.
That's it.
The big story.
Steve's
will be
shopping tip of the week.
Yeah, there you go.
My prediction on Google I/O is the big story will be Android Wear.
Yes, so. Agreed.
Really? Wearables.
Yeah. Well, of course, it's the one Android thing that they can beat Apple on right now.
So. Yeah. But at least they can beat them to market. Yeah.
Yeah, beat them to market on that. And I got to tell you, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Well, here's why I'm looking forward to it. I think Google does big, audacious, hairy goal kinds of stuff. You know, the balloon thing. Go ahead and laugh at them and tease them and all of that, but. You know, it's a huge vision, and they really swing for the fences on a lot of stuff. And that's why I have really deep sadness that Apple and Google couldn't have partnered in some stronger ways.
And they get farther and farther apart. Ugh.
Yeah, they have.
Why can't those kids just get along?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean,
wouldn't it be funny if Johnny Ive worked for Google? Because you could see him in those videos and he could be like, you know, like, we developed the most beautiful dirigibles. Yeah. Yeah. It's hilarious. It'd be funny. But,
Magical. Oh, magical. Man.
Yes. Yeah. They're the smallest dirigibles anywhere.
Well, okay, let's talk a little bit about the Fire Phone here. No,
yeah.
Come on.
This is the big story of the week. Fire Phone.
Well, Amazon's Fire Phone.
So the first thing is, would you buy a phone that had this funky 3D perspective effect thing?
I'm not sure why I would need it.
No.
I'm like, what the heck is this about?
I don't want to get into my phone.
Well, so I think from a usability standpoint, I like this idea that you can tilt the phone and it does stuff. I mean, that to me was good. But all of the image stuff and I don't know, all the other crap that they put into it, it seemed like a big gimmick.
Well, to me, if you watch the video with Bezos, it felt like a fork of Android in a big way.
It is a fork of Android, yeah,
well, but a big fork.
They call it Fire OS, and you'll see this forced perspective thing. I'm sure showing up on the Fire tablets too. But I don't know. It just seemed like a kind of a. It didn't seem like a step forward. It seemed like a gimmick, sort of like all the stuff that Samsung puts into their Galaxy phones that people don't use, like the eye tracking and all the other crap.
Or like on iOS when you move and the background stays, you know.
But that's just a kind of a design touch. It's sort of like a beauty thing.
Yeah,
it's not like a feature. You know what I mean? It's just sort of like, oh, that's cool. You know, this is sort of like, okay, you can turn the phone and a menu pops up. Which again, I think is a fairly interesting idea. The whole forced perspective on the lock screens, it didn't really add up to anything for me. And the big thing was, I think the phone looks fantastic. It looks like a great well-built phone and whatnot. But having it exclusively on AT&T, I think is going to be a problem for them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for now.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll probably do what Apple did, which is let it go for a year and then start to open it up to other networks.
Well, Apple did it for more than a year. Wasn't it like 3 or 4 years before Verizon got it?
You know, I can't remember. No.
I think it was. Actually, I think, okay. Yeah, I think it was a two or three-year deal at least.
Well, I'll tell you from a user interface perspective, I like how they've changed the look and feel of the interface. I mean, it's just slightly better design of all the icons and just the way everything flows, at least what he showed anyway, than stock Android. So I like that. I thought that was nice. Yeah.
No, Fire OS is good. The one of the other problems is that their app store doesn't have every app. So they have most of the big apps, but there are a lot of Android apps that are not in that store for one reason or another. So if you're going to buy a phone like this, you're going to want to make sure that either you know how to sideload Android apps from another Android device, or you know all the apps that you use are in the Amazon store.
So what do you think Best Buy's reaction was to the Firefly feature, which is the ability to push that button and point the camera at something and it'll instantly give you the Amazon price?
I don't think they like that.
Yeah.
Do they ever?
Boy, is that going to make showrooming easy?
Well, showrooming was pretty damn easy to begin with. So.
Well, but still, you had to do 3 or 4 different things to pop up the stuff and be able to look stuff up this way. I mean, literally just holding up the phone and pushing a button is going to just really make it easy. So, I mean, it will.
And that's, I think that from the retail press's perspective, that was the big news on this phone. Right. Is that it's a phone that's directly connected to an e-commerce store. So that will definitely shorten the sales funnel and will sell a lot of goods.
Well, what I had hoped for at some point, maybe a year and a half ago, was something like the Firefly button, but for QR codes. Because, you know, right now I've got anybody that does use QR codes, I've got to unlock my phone. I've got to launch an app that scans the QR code. And then it's fine. Then it'll pull it up in a browser and so on. But it's not integrated into the OS.
Well, why couldn't someone add the QR code scanning function to a phone app? I mean, a camera app. So you do have external buttons. Like I've got a dedicated button for the camera on my phone.
Yeah,
and you can get to it quickly from the lock screen.
Yeah.
Well, so why couldn't you just hit
it? On iOS, you can't assign functions to buttons. Now, that may change in iOS 8. I've read some rumors about that there will be the ability. I mean, just like on a digital SLR, you can often, in most of the mid to upper level cameras, you can change the function button to do whatever you want it to do. So for me, I usually have it to change the ISO and the film speed, if you will. So you can customize that particular button. And there's some buzzing about that's going to be possible in iOS 8, but nobody knows for sure. And so that would be nice if you could do that both on iOS and Android. To your point,
one's done it. You can't do it on Android either. I'd like to see it built into
a
camera app. No, but your one button kind of, you know, so I can hit a button and it starts a camera. It would be nice if that camera app had the ability to do QR code scanning as well as taking pictures. But I haven't seen one that does that.
Well, there's an app called Scan, and I thought it was available in Android as well.
If I wanted to, I could remap my camera app, my default camera app, to be a QR code scanner. But I'd rather have it to actually go to a regular camera app, not a QR code.
I see what you're saying.
I want one app that does both, that takes pictures and does QR code scanning.
Got it.
There's probably some technical reason why that can't be done.
Yeah. Well, if anybody's interested, I will put a link in the show notes to this app. I've looked at a ton of these, and this is the first one that I've really liked, and it's called Scan, and It's iOS and Android and Windows Mobile, Windows tablets. It's got available for Mac and for Kindle. So I mean, it's the best one that I've found so far. Now you can't just take photos with it, so you wouldn't want to assign your camera app to it permanently. But it's $2. And they have a free QR code reader as well. So, yeah. Okay.
So you put this story in here about the secret keys found in Android apps.
Yeah.
I don't understand this at all. I looked at the picture. I'm like, okay, I see secret keys that look like hashes to me in their code. Why is this a security flaw again?
Well, and so basically what this guy wanted to show was how the secret keys that are in the apps themselves
are in the code.
Are okay. in the code. And
so if you reverse compile that, you could pull out these hashes. You could pull out
the key and you could pull out the secret.
And then that could be used to pull out personal information.
Correct. Because with public key cryptography, I'm fine if you have my public key. I just don't want you to have my private one, because then you can decrypt everything. And he was a little bit taken aback by that. You know, again, this means you have to have physical access to the device, but there was a lot of concern about that there was stuff like, you know, your Facebook consumer secret and LinkedIn consumer secret and so on. And, you know, more and more of this is starting to leak out, especially when now that there's buzz about the NSA realizing that, okay, people are using Tor, the Onion router, to be able to secretly surf the net and do searches on DuckDuckGo so that they can't be tracked. But if you can track the MAC address on the device and use that as the primary way of tracking someone, it doesn't matter if they're using Tor or anything, you're going to be able to find them. Which, by the way, fun fact to know and tell, you probably already saw this, but in iOS 8, Apple has built in MAC address rotation. And so it's basically MAC address spoofing, and it'll constantly rotate the MAC address, so you'll never be able to know what it is for that particular device.
And which makes it very hard for retailers to know it's you.
Yes, that
to do their whatever iBeacon snooping.
Correct. And also that's one application that people are bummed out that it won't do that anymore. But also it's device tracking over various networks. So if I use private internet access as my VPN from my iPad, if I don't have MAC address rotation going on, or if I'm not actively spoofing the MAC address on my laptop, then somebody can track me everywhere I go. So,
yep.
Pretty amazing.
Is Phil asleep? Phil?
I nodded off again. Sorry.
Are you asleep?
Oh,
okay.
Oh, come on, Phil. Sorry,
all right. We got to get you back with the smartwatch.
Yeah. Come on. You're going to buy one, right? You're going to throw that pebble out and you're going to buy an Apple smartwatch.
No, I'll probably buy the Moto 360, but I don't know if I'll buy a smartwatch.
Well, the Apple one, you have to be in the Apple stack. So if Phil still got his HTC One,
yeah,
it would be much less fun.
Yeah, but he's got a Mac and he's got an iPad.
Sure, I got iPad. I got iPhones. I got all sorts of stuff. But yeah, I'm sort of enamored with this Moto 360. Well, you know, mostly because I know it's very superficial of me, but it's the form factor. It's round. I like that. So it's like a watch.
And the Google Now functionality is such that I don't think Apple can knock that off because of the way that they do their security.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I think that it's going to be very difficult for them to display the kind of notifications that Google Now does, because it's looking at your mail and your calendar and your location and all that stuff to give you helpful information, which you don't request. And when I was in California last week, that manifested itself in many, many ways where, you know, it reminds you that your flight's coming up in 24 hours and you better check in and here's the information about it, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. But you're going to see an increase of that in Apple too.
So.
Yeah,
I guess. But I think that Google has an advantage that Apple can't really compete with Google now, just because of the security model in iOS. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be an advantage Google will have over Apple. But there are significant advantages that Apple will have over Google that will be very difficult or impossible for Google to duplicate, like that continuation. What do they call that function in iOS 8?
Continuity.
Continuity, yeah. The continuity feature, which looks, you know, really great, that's going to be very difficult for Google to knock off.
Well, but you know what, though? I mean, if I'm going to finish an email, I'm going to stop it in my browser. And it's already saved.
It's already saved as a draft.
Well, it's saved instantly.
Well, you're saved.
I like all the Google because you're on Google.
Yeah,
I like the document stuff. You know, you're in Pages and you stop it. Although you could just stop it and then go on to the web version of iWork, which I do on my Chromebook. Strangely enough, and it works great. So,
you can also do that in Drive. So, yeah.
Quick question for you, true. Phil. You got that watch because you're a developer, right?
What watch?
The Motorola watch.
I haven't gotten it yet. No.
Oh! I thought you already had it.
They're not available yet. It's coming out.
I thought developers could get it.
My guess it'll be a nice. Nope. You can get Google. You have access to Google Wear to use the SDK and
but not start playing around with that device.
Okay. No actual device yet. Yeah.
Oh, I thought developers could buy it. Okay.
No, I'm sure. My guess is they'll be, I don't know, it would be nice if they were a little freebie at I.O., but who knows?
Yeah.
They may have to give away Google Glass just to revive that sucker. So, I think, what are they saying, mid-July, something like that, or July? Yeah.
It'll be sometime this summer.
Yeah. So I would love to get that. But anyway, that's my thing.
Well, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. So anyway, but as far as, you know, multiple designs from Apple and smartwatch, okay, sure.
Yeah.
Let's start with one, guys. Let's just get it out there.
Yeah. Well there's that other article that they've actually started, they're going to start production on it. So it looks like it's, you know, a fairly imminent kind of a thing, like it will actually happen.
Yeah.
Right.
No. I don't know.
You know, I don't know if this is going to be a big thing. I think that the way Fitbit is doing their line, where they've got a wrist version and they've got another version that you can clip on your clothes or your underwear or wherever you want to wear it. I think that's an interesting strategy. And if Apple, what if Apple's, you know, sensor was a little clip-on thing? I think that would make a lot of sense. And people are so focused on all the notification thing. What if they came out with just a fitness device that was fully integrated with iOS?
They will, and it's going to be amazing.
Well, I think they will. I don't know if it'll be amazing, but you know.
Well, we'll see.
I think that a lot of people would be disappointed if it wasn't a watch form factor for some reason. I don't know why.
Huh.
Well, you know, because people have been saying their wearable will be a watch. You know, who knows? Maybe it won't be.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll be a pocket watch.
Yeah, that would be.
Wait a minute. That's a phone. Sorry.
It will be a monocle. So it'll be a pocket watch.
There you
watch
go. It'll be a
with
monocle.
A monocle that will be a heads-up display. So it'll be sort of like Google Glass in that way. But it'll only be one eye.
That's right. Just
yeah.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be? That'd be a
hit. It's the rebirth of the monocle.
It would be a hipster. That would be definitely a hipster standard device.
Yeah, yeah.
But
you'd have to wear an ascot.
Exactly.
Well.
And you'd have to grow a handlebar mustache.
Yeah. Well. There you go.
And then
there
twist it every once in a while.
Yeah.
On the ends.
The monocle comes with free mustache wax. Why not?
So what is Steve going to do for the artwork for this for this episode?
Oh, I know. Just I can see us sporting monocles in no time.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Well, this next story, guys, I got to tell you, I really got mad.
Why did you get mad?
Well, I got mad because I absolutely love IKEA hackers.
Oh, the IKEA hackers. Yeah.
Yeah. And IKEA hackers, for those of you that are listening that don't know, IKEA hackers is a site that basically shows how people have taken either products or parts from IKEA and have done something new with it. You know, especially, you know, they're essentially hacking the stuff and, you know, they're building stand-up desks and they're putting in things that shouldn't be shelves and they're making them into shelves and doing interesting things with the lighting and so on. Well, so IKEA comes out with a cease and desist that, that they're stomping on their brand and making money from the brand and blah, blah, blah. And that they've got to change the name of the site and also change the URL. And it looks like it's going to move forward and people are sort of screaming about this because others love it too. And,
well, I'm not really exactly sure. I'm not exactly sure why to, you know, why it's such a big deal to IKEA. I mean, these people are out there buying furniture kits to hack this stuff together.
They're selling more stuff.
I don't understand why this is a problem. You know,
well, because they're selling advertising. That's their big thing is that bloggers selling advertising, and they wouldn't have a problem with them if they just took the advertising off, and that's what they're saying. Yeah. But as a blogger, we all know that that's the way you're going to make money, especially a site that gets as many page views as this one does.
Right.
So it's kind of a real problem where will that blogger just say, oh, okay, I'll just continue to operate this, but there will be no advertising on it? I'm not sure if I was the owner of this, I would be that excited about doing that.
You know, there really isn't that much advertising on. Now, I use AdBlock, so most of the stuff gets removed, but...
It's a fair amount. I'm looking at the site now, and the site's still here, so I'm going to site sucker this thing right after the podcast.
Yeah.
So I've got a copy of it.
Yeah, it's a great, great little site. Anyway, that really got to me because I was really steamed about it. So anyway.
It seems like a stupid thing for IKEA to do.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yep.
Agreed.
Come on, IKEA. I'm sure that someone from IKEA must listen to this podcast.
We're huge in Sweden.
Yeah, big in Sweden. We are huge in Sweden. We're big in Sweden.
Well, you know, I feel like we talked hacking, so we got to talk about security. Do we not?
I know. I wonder if we should.
Steve's security tip of the week.
It's good to hear the lady back.
Ava's back. All right.
I was listening to the podcast last week and I was dismayed when I heard
Steve talking about Steve.
Yeah. Good. It was good that you called him on it, Phil. Okay.
All right. Well, so here's my tip of the week.
Yes.
Do not have unprotected insertion of your USB cable into a charging station.
All right. You got to tell me about what this is all about.
Okay, what this is all about, and Brian Krebs, the Krebs on Security guy that broke the Target story, did an article.
If you saw Brian, Steve, if you saw Brian Krebs at a mall or something, would you ask him to sign your breast, just out of curiosity?
No, I probably wouldn't.
Okay.
Anyway, will you stop? Anyway, I'd heard about juice jacking before, and basically what it is when you take your USB cable from your phone and you plug it into one of these USB charging stations, the Apple iPhone is the worst offender because it immediately tries to sync. So it immediately starts to probe through the data portion of the plug. And that's bad because obviously, you know, it can fool the phone into getting some data off of it. And it's becoming more and more prevalent. And it's even happening with Android and Windows mobile phones specifically. And so there are companies that make essentially what they're euphemistically calling USB condoms, which defeat the data portion of the cable, whatever cable it is. So you plug the USB into this and you plug the condom portion into the USB charging station and then you're fine. Well, so I looked at this and immediately thought, yeah, but okay, if I don't use any of those, which I never do, and just use my plug, you know, your electrical outlet and plug it into an electrical outlet, you're fine. Mm-hmm. And so my security tip of the week is, you know, unless you know what you're doing, just don't use USB charging stations. Just plug it in the wall. Bring your little charging unit with you and plug it in the wall because it is becoming more and more of an issue. And then, you know, with this thing that we talked about with Android and these secret keys being exposed, I don't know the answer, and I haven't seen anything on it yet, of whether or not secret keys can be snagged from these USB charging stations. And then if you're sitting in the airport plugged in and you try to go to LinkedIn or Facebook, can someone use those keys to immediately grab your credentials? And I have not seen anything on that yet, but that's the promise of the threat. So anyway, that's the tip. Don't plug in unless you're protected.
That's a good tip. That's an inexpensive tip.
It is.
That is.
Well done, sir. Well,
when
well
I was
done.
At the airport this past week, they'd still have those Samsung charging stations, and all they are is, you know, the plug-in thing. I think they do have USBs there though too, but I always just plug it in with my with the plug that comes with the phone. So
Yeah. Well, and anyway. there are charging stations that are just batteries only. Mm-hmm. You know, and so you can plug into those, but it's best just not to, you know, have unsafe charging through your USB cable.
Okay.
Indeed.
So what events are coming up here, boys? Anything new?
No, I couldn't find anything new.
No.
So I think it's kind of a slow time for events.
Well, it always is. You know, we've been amazed though in summers past that there's actually anything going on. Cause if you remember 08 and 09 and even into 2010, we would literally work our butts off to try to come up with stuff to talk about in the summer. And now it's like, oh my God, every week something's going on,
mm-hmm.
which is good. So anything you guys are up to?
Let's see. No, I just, we are, just
when's for
those,
the
those of you
twin,
that are
mobile, twin, the mobile cities twin cities
has when moved now to the second Monday of the month. So I believe that's the 14th of July. We'll be having that at Coco. The nice thing about having it at Coco Downtown is that our friends at Google for Entrepreneurs is picking up the tab. So food and drink provided by the Googstals.
Great.
Nice. So, but that is the second Monday of every month. So look for, you know, a new website and everything soon. And we'll talk about, we'll, I'm sure, be talking about WWDC. We'll talk about Google I.O. In the next event. So hopefully you can join us.
Well, you know what, you guys?
Food and drink to be served.
I just have to mention one thing before we get off. So here it is, Saturday at about 9:30. And yes. I just got an email from Amazon that my new Sony RX100 Model 3 has shipped.
What is that?
It's Sony's new handheld camera that is getting absolutely rave reviews because of its low light capability.
That's Steve.
It's a little handheld camera. Well, I'm going to take it to Europe. What?
Steve.
What?
We've moved on from Steve's shopping tip of the week.
Oh, my God. Sorry.
Yeah. You've already had one shopping tip, so.
No, he's had two.
Two is too many.
I have?
God, geez, yes.
Oh. Well, it's pretty soon Phil's going to be talking about his new Gulfstream 6 jet. Yeah, right. I just picked her up today, and I got a deal on it. It was only $38 million.
That would be fun. So
my permanent two-person crew is only $250,000 a year. What?
What's your magic camera's model again? So the Sony what?
The Sony DSC-RX100M and then 3. It's the CyberShot digital still camera. Oh, my God.
You know, I got to tell you, Sony still has not gotten to a point where they understand how to give models numbers to Garden. You know,
none of these Japanese comics.
I'm sure it all makes sense to them, but.
Well, and I love stuff like their LCD protector PCKLM15. It's like, what?
Roger that.
Yeah. But Sony's got a new camera.
That's a spendy little camera.
Well, it is, but based on the quality, the camera that I really wanted was the Sony A7S because it shoots uncompressed 4K video, and its low light capability is beyond stunning. But the camera body, and I need two lenses. Well, I would want two lenses. Would be about $4,500.
Holy crap!
And I thought, I'm probably not going to do that. So
very nice.
That's just too crazy.
Very nice.
But anyway.
All right.
All right, kids.
Well, with that, we'll let Steve get in the car and head to the mall.
with my scanning app.
And we'll talk a little bit about what he bought and also what's happening in innovation in Minnesota next week on
the Minnovate Gang Podcast. Take care.
Have a good week.
Not innocent, and don't ask how she pays the rent in a cheap hotel a mile down the road. She's a hurricane at 5'7", the bluest eyes this side of heaven, and if you treat her right, she'll be good to go. Well, it takes all night, but she feels so right. She's a sweet soul shaker. She turns out the light, she's a money maker. Oh yeah. She's a stone cold, stone cold heartbreaker. Well, you're in too deep when the levee breaks. She got a hook in you, and now you know the deal. Well, she might not be the sharpest tool, but